In the early 1970s, many Latin American nations looked to the untapped resources of their jungles as the key to prosperity and modernization. Huge development projects, dams, coal and gold mines, oil exploration projects, colonization and road building programs, cattle and cash crop export strategies were funded by international development banks. In Panama, the World Bank loaned the government nearly $70 million for its master plan for the jungle. First, a dam would be built to help generate new industry and wean Panama from its dependence on the United States and the canal. Second, to promote land reform and new settlement, a road would be carved into new lands in the jungle. The dam flooded the homelands of the 1,500 Kuna Indians, who were relocated to villages along the highway. Now, nearly 20 years later, tens of thousands of landless peasants have streamed down the new road and have come face to face with the Kunas. Today, producers Nancy Postero and Sandy Tolan bring us a story of two cultures colliding on the fragile soils of a new frontier.
Midday, under a fierce tropical sun, an old Kuna Indian pulls a dugout boat through the waters above his old home. He squints in the glare of the man-made lake.
This was all mountains and virgin forests. And then the waters rose and everything died.
Se inundó todo y se murieron. Eso es lo que pasó.
Off to the west, a concrete wall, the Bayano Dam, rises from the water's edge. When they closed the gates in 1976, 80% of the Kuna's lands were flooded. The old man remembers watching each day for a year and a half as the line of water crept higher and higher. Thousands of small animals sought refuge in treetops, then were drowned.
Many of us Kunas said this could never happen. Water couldn't cover all this land. Men can't act as gods. Only God could do that. We didn't know about dams. By the time we learned, it was too late. Now, this is a tree cemetery.
The dam and the lake were the beginnings of Panama's master plan for the jungle. Then came the road. Across the big metal bridge that towers behind the old man, the Pan-American Highway spans the reservoir and winds deep into the forest. It is the central artery for a great migration of homesteaders. In a little valley, just off the rutted, muddy highway, a group of settlers gathers outside a one-room adobe house to celebrate a baptism. The men wear straw hats, pleated white shirts, and crude leather sandals in the Spanish tradition they've brought from the Panamanian heartland. Their arms are darkened from long days in the fields. Under a stand of laurel trees, Raul Ramos, godfather of the new baby boy, plays the traditional music that reminds these colonists of their home in Panama's interior. Six years ago, the Ramos family, nearly starving to death, they say, left the eroded lands of central Panama to homestead in the jungle. Raul's father, Antonio, stands beside a neatly trimmed hedge, drinking fermented home brew from a tin cup.
I'm happy here. We began a new life. It was a great sadness to leave my home, but I had to find a way to support my family. I have 8 sons. They're in the interior. All the lands are used up, ruined. There are just pastures now, and there is no place to farm. So we came here, it was pure forest, and we had to open it up to plant our crops. Clearing a forest is very hard, but if you want to eat, you have to do it.
Pero hay que hacerlo, porque si no, ¿qué vamos a hacer?
For 100 miles to the east, thousands of settlers have cut back the forest, carving a huge swath all the way to the end of the road, just short of the Colombian border. They've transformed the land, planting crops, seeding pasture, building tough frontier towns. Logging trucks carry hardwoods back toward the capital. Ranchers run cattle up and down the road. New settlers pack beat-up buses piled high with machetes and chainsaws. Across the highway from the Ramos homestead, in a village hidden by the forest, 400 Kuna Indians gather in their sacred meeting house. For 4 hours each night, the entire village of Ipati comes to this building of cane and thatch beside the river. The women, with gold rings in their noses, sit beneath kerosene lamps, sewing their intricate mola blouses of orange and blue. They listen as their chiefs, eyes closed, smoking from pipes, swing in hammocks and chant ancient dreams and instructions to the people. On this night, Chief Alejandro Gaspar has convened a special meeting with Kuna chiefs from across the region to discuss the threats facing his people. Settlers are encroaching on Kuna territory.
For thousands of years, our ancestors lived on their own in this forest just as we have. We have said to many that this land is ours. We tell this to the settlers, but they are deaf. They want our lands. But the question is, if they take our lands, where will we go? What will become of us?
The Kunas have lived in the forests of Panama and Colombia since long before Balboa crossed the isthmus and sighted the Pacific in 1513. In this century, the Kunas built a vibrant trade with Panama City, selling the fruit from their vast orchards along the Bayano River, which they called the River of Plantains. 15 years ago, when their lands were flooded, the Kunas were resettled by the government to new villages above the reservoir. They were promised title to their land, but never received it. Tonight, Gaspar and the other old chiefs still mourn the loss of their old lands and the devastation of their livelihood.
The greatest pain in the loss of our fruit trees is that they didn't just last for 1 or 2 years, but for 20, 30, 40 years. These are the trees that our grandparents planted. When I die, these trees were to remain for my children and grandchildren. What legacy can I leave now for my grandchildren? That's the pain I have about the past.
Where the Kunas live today, the soils are too poor to grow fruit trees, and the animals they used to hunt have been driven out by the settlers and their chainsaws. The Kunas must rely almost entirely upon their traditional method of growing food, cutting a small patch of forest, planting for 2 or 3 years, and then leaving it for decades so the jungle and the fragile soils can regenerate. But in recent years, the settlers have taken over more and more land, and the Kunas have less room to raise food. And last year, a few colonos, as the Kunas call the settlers, homesteaded in the forest on the Kuna side of the road, less than a mile from the village of Ipati. In the past, the Kunas have ceded lands to the settlers on the edge of their territory. But now, the Kunas say, the colonos are getting too close.
Oh, One can see in the frontiers of settlement today a confrontation between two people, between two ways of relating to the soil.
Stanley Hakadan Moreno has written several books about colonization and ranching in Panama's tropical forests. He is former director of Panama's Department of Natural Resources.
Our Kuna Indians, for thousands of years, they are the masters of the jungle. The way they relate to it, the way they respect it, they belong to it. The colono mentality, the campesino, the mestizo, is a conquistador.
Up the road from the Kuna village, in an open-air bar called El Descanso, the resting place, young settlers raised on the frontier do the Apunto dance, the dance of conquest. The women extend their long, full skirts in a semicircle, chins to their shoulders, casting the red and white polka-dotted ruffles from side to side. They are followed step for step by young mustachioed men. The couples appear glued to each other, but they never touch. They dance in front of a mural that reads Tradiciones de mi tierra, homeland traditions, brought to Panama centuries ago from the Spanish province of Andalusia.
Almost 500 years after the discovery of the mainland, we see this replaying of the expansion of the hacienda.
Panamanian ecologist Stanley Hakadan.
Pushing into the forest, holding the ground, expelling the minorities. It's a drama of internal colonialism. We are reliving a drama of the conquista.
The Spaniards brought with them to Panama a mentality of colonization and of destruction of forest.
Juan Carlos Navarro is the director of the Association for the Conservation of Nature.
This pioneer mentality went something like this. Nature has to be dominated totally by man. We need to destroy the natural forest cover, which is full of evil and strange creatures, which are harmful to us. And we need to convert that into something that we can dominate.
Each year in April, at the end of the dry season, Raul Ramos and his family have struggled to tame the jungle. The first year, after they cut down all the trees, they slashed the undergrowth with machetes and burned the lands to prepare it for crops and pasture. Every year since, just before the rains come, they've burned again to keep the jungle away. Raul crosses the Rio Esperanza, the River of Hope, and moves up the grassy hillside near his house, armed with a pack of matches. Fire-resistant palms stand out like lone candlesticks on the horizon. At the top of the hill, Raul grabs a long clump of weeds and lights them on fire. He moves backward down the hill, touching his torch to the grass.
O sea que se quema por la aprovechar de que el monte se muere.
We burn the forest so it will die. We know we're doing damage to the forest, but we have to make it produce.
Like his father, Raul came to the jungle with visions of presiding over a productive farm and vast cattle ranch. After they cleared the land the first year, their corn reached 12 feet. But with each burning, the quality of the soil declined. The next year, the crops were half that size. By the fourth year, nothing would grow but grass.
The burning has caused deforestation and erosion and destroyed production. We can't grow corn or rice or anything.
Now, just like back home, this land is only good for pasture. But the problem is, the family is too poor to buy any cows. Raul hopes that someday that will change, so he keeps burning his sterile lands, so they're ready, just in case.
Si dejamos crecer el monte,
If we let the land go back to forest, then it won't be good for either pasture or crops. So we burn it so that only the pasture grass will grow. But we still can't use it because we don't have cattle yet.
Maybe by next season, he says, looking over the orange wall of flame moving across the hills. Many of the Ramos' neighbors, having destroyed their forests and unable to afford cattle, have given up. They've sold their lands to wealthy ranchers and moved on. Slowly, all the small homesteads up and down the highway are being transformed into huge cattle ranches. Ecologist Stanley Hecadon.
When the first rains start in May, they come with a vengeance. I mean, these are tropical downpours. And so they hit the unprotected soil, and down they carry massive amounts of soil downhill. On top of that, the cattle are going up and down the hills, sloshing with their mechanical action of their feet, pumping away at that ground, softening it, making it into a slush. It rains some more, and then you can see the formation of gullies, small gullies first, and then huge ones. So the greatest export of the individual farm is not cattle, it's not food, it's the soil.
The millions of tons of soil from the farms and cattle ranches along the Pan American Highway wash into the network of streams of the Bayano watershed and eventually into the reservoir behind the dam. Now, the silt is beginning to fill the lake and put pressure on the concrete plug holding the waters back.
This is the turbine pit. Here we have the shaft running.
Inside the hydroelectric plant, 200 feet below the surface of the lake, the government superintendent for the dam says siltation of the reservoir is causing problems. It's reducing the amount of water available to generate electricity, and it's ruining the turbine blades. Because of this, Humberto Gonzalez says, the electrical generators are running at 25% capacity.
The reality is that if this situation above our dam in the lake continues, we will not have water to run the turbines. We will have many solids, many sedimentations, and the destruction of this machine will be inevitable.
The entire thing is a complete disaster.
Panamanian environmentalist Juan Carlos Navarro says the master plan for the Bayano has gone wrong.
This policy, in fact, achieved an objective which was totally the opposite of what they originally set out to do. They wanted to guarantee land for the small farmer. They wanted a road put into these areas so that the population which was there already would have access to the markets in Panama City and so forth. But in fact, none of that happened. The native population got displaced, and instead of having farmers owning the small plots that they need to survive, you have big landowners who are accumulating land for speculation. The entire area has become an example of how not to go about development.
It's September now. During a lull in the rainy season, Raul Ramos sits in his hammock strumming a guitar. Since the burning season, the family still hasn't been able to buy any cows. Raul looks out at his family's 200 acres of grass. When you're hungry, he says, you can only hold on to your dreams for so long.
We are selling the land that we bought 6 years ago. It was forest when we came here. But now, since the forest is gone, we don't have anywhere to work because it's all full of grass. So we're selling it to find land where there's forest to clear so we can grow crops. We can't stay here because we don't have cattle. It's only good for those who have cattle.
No, no tenemos ganado. Eso le conviene que tiene ganado.
Raul says the family wants to sell the land to one of the biggest cattle ranchers in Panama. They will move deeper into the jungle with their chainsaws to cut the forest and begin the cycle again. They look longingly at the dense forests of the Cuna, The Kunas don't work their lands, Raul's father says. They don't use it for anything.
And so is the rice. Annamne. Pabanga daile guna panay nais.
God made this land perfect, but now it's not perfect because things have been destroyed.
It's dusk in the Kuna village of Ipati. Next door to the sacred meeting hall, Chief Gaspar and his son-in-law Marcelino talk about how to respond to all these changes. These days, the Kunas are finding it harder and harder to live the way they used to. They need money. And so they've begun a discussion within the village about the future. As a light rain begins to fall, Marcelino outlines the vision of the younger Kunas to build a big rice plantation and buy a tractor to till the soil. And they've just bought their first chainsaw to cut and sell hardwoods.
Nosotros hemos aprendido de los colonos a quién debemos matar para conseguir la plata. Digo eso.
We've learned from the settlers about the logging, what we have to kill to make money. We know that when we cut down a tree, it's like it has money in its pocket. When it's dead, we take the money out of its pocket. This we learned from them.
Asimismo, nos enseñaron los colonos.
The world is advancing. We can't stay behind. We have to follow new beliefs, new goals. Our ancestors lived in another atmosphere. There was no highway. They never heard the sounds of a chainsaw or an outboard motor. Our Kuna beliefs to live together, one faith, one ideology. That's very beautiful. But we also have to adapt.
The rain stops, and Gaspar looks out the door of his thatch home. A few old chiefs, wearing their traditional bright shirts, wide ties, and pork pie hats, walk single file down a slippery mud path that leads to the river to bathe. Fireflies emerge, sparkling in the night air. Gaspar says he's wary of any big changes.
I love my land because this is the land my father, God, gave me. I don't want it destroyed because in it are animals. Deer, wild boar, iguanas, monkeys, and all our medicinal plants. If the settlers invade our lands, the land would be filled with cows and pasture, nothing more.
But the settlers continue to threaten Kuna lands. Dozens of families, after decimating their own lands, have invaded territory on the Kuna side of the Pan-American Highway. The Kunas have threatened the intruding settlers, demanding that they leave. Recently, a colonist tried to burn down a Kuna house in the village of Ipati. The elders had to convince the Kuna youths, increasingly impatient, not to kill the man. But now, even elders like Chief Gaspar say, if the Kunas don't get title to their lands, there's going to be a war.
Our patience is ending, little by little. We aren't going to leave and give this land to the settlers. Many years ago, the blood of the Kunas was spilled by the Spanish conquistadores. Now the time may have come again. The only answer is to fight soon and to spill blood on this land.
The threat of violence has prompted officials in Panama City, after years of inaction, to intervene in the conflict along the Pan-American Highway. Last fall, they drafted a proposal to designate the Kuna lands as a special hydroelectric reserve. The plan would force settlers off the lands on the Kuna side of the highway. It would also put the Kunas in charge of protecting the watershed from further deforestation, thus delaying the destruction of the dam. Now, 15 years after being forced to move from the River of Plantains, the Kunas are being asked to help save what's left of Panama's master plan for the jungle. With Sandy Tolan, this is Nancy Postero.